My name is Cody Benkelman. I'm a product manager on the imagery team in Redlands. And Lindsay Weitz is one of our product engineers on the 3D analyst team.
3D, yeah.
Something like that. So
I don't know what they call it.
So what we want to talk about today is managing LiDAR and photogrammetric point clouds. This presentation has evolved over the last few years, and in the past we didn't explicitly say photogrammetric point clouds. We'll try and be really clear where there's a difference, but in general what we're talking about would be applicable to both, but not in all cases. So just to give you a bit of a quick outline, if you've never worked with LiDAR and you're not really sure what it is and you're looking for a great overview and introduction, unfortunately that's not this session. But otherwise, you're welcome, and even if that is what you're looking for, you're welcome to stay. You may learn a bit. But we're assuming you know what LiDAR is, first return, class codes, that sort of thing. So we'll talk a little bit about what you can do with LiDAR and ArcGIS. Lindsay's going to show some demos in the different apps. But really, we want to focus more on that management question, or maybe that's just me. I want to focus more, because that's what I do. She works more with the LiDAR data. And then we'll, again, try and be clear where we're talking about or where there are differences with photogrammetrically derived point clouds. And I didn't have on that slide mobile versus airborne, but of course there are some differences there as well. So within our presentation, we're going to talk about LAS, the LAS format and the ZLAS format, which some of you, I assume, have heard about. There's another format called LAZ, just to answer the question in case anybody's wondering. No, today we still don't support LAZ, although I am still working on getting that added. Lindsay will talk a little bit about the LAS data set, which is a data structure for managing LAS files or ZLAS files, the terrain data set, and then I will talk about the Mosaic data set, and then in my part of the presentation I'll focus in a little bit more on the data management, talking about derived products and specifically the automation part, which the management part I know is kind of dry and boring for some people, but the automation is really worth listening to if you've got more than a handful of LiDAR files or projects. So the data structures within ArcGIS that support LiDAR focus on the LAS format. It's still the most efficient format, either LAS or ZLAS, but those are the formats we read directly. And we read those or reference them, I should say, using something called the LAS data set. So when you put LAS files into a LAS data set, you're not copying the points. You're just making, it's just a table that points to those files and allows you to work with multiple LAS files as a logical project. The terrain data set, Lindsay will go into a bit more detail, but that is a structure inside a geodatabase, so you are copying data or replicating data into the geodatabase, but from my view, I see that as primarily focused on managing an authoritative bare earth DEM. The terrain data set's really not designed for, and generally I would say is not appropriate for, the digital surface model for the first return points showing trees and buildings. It's really more for managing multiple edits on a bare earth. And then the Mosaic data set is focused on imagery or rasters, but if you're working with the DSM and DTM coming out of LiDAR, that's where we go into the Mosaic data set. And I think this is where we switch over to number one.
Yep. All right, welcome everybody. I just wanted to start off with a slide on some of the different data types that are out there right now for point clouds. So does everyone here kind of work with LiDAR, have some LiDAR data? So the one of the very first sensors was an airborne platform. And so we've worked hard to support aerial LiDAR. A new type of airborne system is the Geiger mode LiDAR, which I think is commercialized by Harris. They're a partner of ours.
That's correct. Harris has the Geiger mode, but there's Sigma Space, which has...
Another
single photon LiDAR. If there's a real expert in the crowd, you may correct me. I think those are, for the most part, two different names for essentially the same
technology. So I guess I should have changed that a little bit. But those kinds of sensors basically can fly a lot higher than the scanned LiDAR. The one key difference is with the scanned LiDAR, you have multi-returns from one single laser pulse, whereas the Geiger mode returns only one pulse. And then with mobile LiDAR, it's drive around, collect mobile data, as well as tripod-based scanners that are used a lot for interior spaces. And then we have the photogrammetric point clouds that are coming out now from all the drones being flown, and you might have seen the drone cage down in the exhibition this week, producing those point clouds. A little bit about our application. So historically, we've had ArcMap, ArcScene, ArcGlobe, ArcCatalog, and we've really been working hard the past couple of years to kind of fuse all those applications together into what we now have is ArcGIS Pro, where we have a 2D and 3D environment completely in one, where you can link views, visualize data in both a 2D and 3D environment. I'll be showing a little bit about each one of these in my demo today. So the last files, you've heard last data set and last files. Last files were a binary file format developed by the ASPRS. They are directly readable into ArcGIS, and they're the most common format for LiDAR and other point clouds. They've changed the standards over the years, and we've been able to adopt all the different formats that they have. We developed a ZLAS format a couple years ago. It's great. It's a compression format for compressing and sorting and indexing LAS files. It's free. You can download it from our website, which is right here. And one of our new tools in ArcGIS Pro supports output of ZLAS into what we call the TileLAS tool. One of the options with using the ZLAS, and actually there are options throughout the software now where we can do this, is rearranging the points. So we found with vendors delivering tile data to you, two points might be located next to one another, but they're at opposite ends of the file. So we can rearrange the points now so that the points that are next to one another are indexed next to one another, and it makes it much quicker to visualize the data, view the data in ArcGIS. So I highly recommend using the rearrange options in some of our tools. So what's the last data set? The last data set is simply just a pointer to a collection of LAS or ZLAS files stored on disk. It's very quick to build and to create. It's a great QA/QC tool for LiDAR when you first get it. It's file-based, so it's super fast, as I said. It also stores reference to break lines. So if you have study area boundaries, water features, you can add that information into the last data set and have that enforced in the triangulation. It's very quick to build. You can either use the context menu in our catalog, or you can use scripts and models in the GP tools. It's great for basically, when you bring in the LAS files, you can generate statistics. It doesn't take long at all. I can show you how to do that, too. But you can see exactly what your point count is, your point spacing, your Z range. So when you first get data, I highly recommend quickly throwing it into a LAS data set and looking at what is there. If there's something you see that's not right, you can go back to the vendor very quickly without having to go and view your data and see it later on. We have file-based statistics, so on each particular file, as well as data set-based statistics, where you can see your classification, your returns, etc. We do have tools to edit the classification codes that are in your LAS files. So we have interactive classification, where you can reclassify, misclassify data using either a profile view in ArcMap, and then now in ArcGIS Pro, 1.3, we can use a selection-based approach. We also have a series of automated tools. I'm going to go through some of those next to classify your LiDAR data. So one of the first ones is last point statistics by area. So if you have input LiDAR data and polygons, you can generate statistics for those polygons. So in this example, we see buildings. So we've generated the Z maximum height, the mean, the point count, and the standard deviation for each of those polygons. We have a classify LAS by height tool, which is great in this example for forestry applications. where we can basically look at the point cloud and say, okay, but everything between 0 to 2 feet classify as low vegetation, 2 to 5 medium vegetation, and anything above that high vegetation. So it's a great tool to, especially for forestry applications, to reclassify your data. We have a proximity tool. So like in this example, we see a wire, and we want to know how far away are the points from this wire. See, basically looking at vegetation encroachment in this example. So we can select all those points and reclassify them based on their proximity to the feature. And here's another example of sight lines. So we have a series of sight lines, and we want to select all the points within a certain distance from those sight lines and reclassify them for further analysis. Another interesting new tool is our extract last tool, where we can extract a small portion or a larger portion of a LiDAR data set. So you can basically reclassify. You can look at buildings, for example. I'm going to show this as a demo, but have a series of buildings and say, okay, I want to just take those buildings out and extract them from my point cloud to use for further analysis in another situation. You can do that now. And we also have a tile tool. This tool also takes advantage of the rearrange option, same with the extract last, where you can retile data. And I've done that actually since we released this tool with older data that I like to use to test with. And I've retiled it and rearranged it, and it's so much faster in ArcGIS now that I've done that. So you can tile based on size, dimensions. It's really handy for older data and new data that you get that's maybe in flight lines or mobile data that's in very large files. The smaller the data, the better, we say, smaller size. We also have a classify last ground tool. So this takes a LiDAR data set that has ground versus non-ground and classifies out just the ground points, as well as a building classification tool. This is new for 1.3 Pro, and we'll be putting it in 10.5 later this year, but we basically take buildings and reclassify them to class code of 6. We do see some discrepancies when there's a lot of vegetation around buildings, where it's harder to decipher between the vegetation and the buildings. So definitely take a look at the data after you run this tool or run a small sample.
What's the resolution usually to get a decent?
You know, that's a good question. What's the resolution, the best resolution for to get good quality classification for buildings? It's pretty dense. Less than a couple meter, like a couple points per square meter, I would say.
Meaning more, yeah.
More data is better.
Yeah, what I would say, it would be typically 4 points per square meter would kind of be a minimum to get very good results. It gets expensive to get more than that. Now, that's one thing that's changing with the Geiger mode LiDAR.
Right.
You do get higher point densities. But
then with the Geiger mode, a lot of our algorithms take advantage of the multi-point return from airborne LiDAR, and that's what we build a lot of our technology on. So I haven't tested this tool with the Geiger mode yet, or the photogrammetric point clouds. So that's down the road. That's all new technology. But we base our tools on the airborne LiDAR. So the higher resolution your data is, the better results you're going to get. These are a series of sample tools that my team builds. It takes a lot of work to get a lot of our tools into the core product. So we build samples for you that are free. You can download this, go to this website, and there's tools for vegetation analysis, a lot of forestry applications, more classification tools, more analysis tools for LiDAR, conversion tools. So it's a great suite of tools. We've had a lot of good feedback from these tools. And again, we're working towards putting more of these into the core product as we release different software. Some best practices for LiDAR. Tiled makes it much easier to access. Version 1.1 of the last spec or higher, the previous version didn't have any classification code specified. Projected data, rearranged, like I said, it's just so much better to access the data when it's rearranged. And ZLAS format, it compresses the data down to considerable sizes. If you're working with airborne data, definitely classified, at least ground versus non-ground data. Brake lines if you're working on any hydro enforcement. And terrestrial data, definitely RGB is much, have the points painted with RGB. It's hard to decipher features without it in with mobile data or tripod data. And then I wanted to introduce quickly the terrain data set before I get into some demos. The terrain data set was originally designed at, I think, ArcGIS 9.2. So it's been around for quite a while. It was one of our very first tools for working with LiDAR data after TINS. And if anyone's been knows TINS very well, 10 million points is the maximum, which is not useful with LiDAR. So we built a terrain data set as a multi-resolution TIN-based surface model. It's created from features stored in the geodatabase and managed in the geodatabase. So way back when, we were looking at a lot of topographic and bathymetric mapping applications and photogrammetric data, brake lines, contours, LiDAR, and sonar were the key things we were trying to build this surface model for. This is just a graphical representation of that. So we see the points and brake lines, study area boundaries on the top, and then we build different, using pyramid levels, different zoom levels of based on elevation. We basically thin down the points from full resolution when you're zoomed in and need a full resolution to a very thin representation when you're zoomed out, looking at maybe a countywide data set. You don't need to see all the points at that zoom level. So we take advantage of that. This is that particular algorithm is for bare earth modeling, so you wouldn't really use this for multi return LiDAR. We do have an algorithm for that, so it's window size based. It's not elevation based. So there's two different algorithms to build a terrain model with. So we do support it for all data. But yeah, you see kind of strange features with that kind of data in a terrain model because it is a TIN.
So it's not necessarily holding the maximum values on ridges.
Not with the window size. With the Z value, with the Z threshold, the Z tolerance it is. So that's why it's more for mapping just ground data. So some advantages of using terrains is that it's scalable. We've had billions and billions of points built into a terrain model, and it's great for managing LiDAR data over a long period of time. You can update bits and pieces of the terrain model where it listens to edit events and the source measurements, and then it can just be rebuilt based on that area. It's multi-user. It's in the geodatabase. It's good for versioning and database tools. I just talked about this a little bit. So it supports for versioning and SDE. And again, updates are done in the source measurements and then rebuilt afterwards in the terrain data set. And I'm not going to really demo the terrains here. I'm going to mostly focus on LiDAR and LAST data sets. We found a lot with terrains, people spend an awful lot of time building them and then having issues because you couldn't take a look at the statistics and information in the LiDAR data, and so that's when we built the LAST data set, which is simply a reference to the LAST files on disk. We're not reading anything in, and it has a lot of the same capabilities that terrains do when it comes to analysis. So let me move into a little demo here. So the first thing I want to show is this is a LAST data set. This is from the Petaluma area near Napa. Quite a nice area, I must say. And I already built the surface model here. So it's about 44 million points. Under the last files tab in the layer properties, you can see where I add and remove the files. It's very quick to add the files and remove them. As soon as they come in, you can see what version we're working with here. Excuse me, the point count, the point spacing, and the Z range. And then for each file, I have additional statistical information. So the general section is all the information in the header file of each last file, when it was created, how it was created, if it has RGB values or not. You can see the extent, the attributes, the classification codes that are present in this file, and the return values. And we can also add surface constraints. I don't have any for this example, but if I had a study area boundary or roadways or water features, I can add them here as well, and they can be enforced. Another key thing about the last data set is it can be viewed as either a TIN model or a point cloud. So I'll show you some of that too. And we can see the coordinate system as well. And oftentimes, LiDAR data doesn't have a coordinate system. So we have tools to project the data, but I highly recommend having it projected and having a coordinate system in the file. One thing about ArcGIS Pro is that it doesn't let the data display if it doesn't have a coordinate system, so something to keep in mind. So once I have the data in, we see that we're looking at the tile boundaries, and there's no data being viewed. But as I zoom in, more data is coming in, being displayed. So we're looking at the classification values here. And I can filter the points just to look at the ground points. I can also take a look at, looking at the TIN model. So this is a TIN of just the ground points. I think I might have been zooming around too much. There we go. There we go. So it's very interactive. It's going to TIN on the fly as I pan around. We're only looking at about 3% of the data, though, because I'm still zoomed out quite a distance. Let's see. Let's zoom to this area. So now we're looking at about 32% of the data. So we're not using all the data, and you do have an idea of how much data we are using. So let's go back to the points. We can also look at the contours, slope and aspect renderers as well for the TIN, and elevation versus classification for the points and return values. Another interesting, you know, everything in ArcMap is obviously 2D, so we have a 3D viewer. If you want to look at an area of interest, you can look at the 3D viewer. There we go. And we can zoom in. We can take measurements here to measure the height, possibly from one of these shots. Come on. So you can see the information is at the top of the window about how tall our segment is. Another thing we can do with ArcMap is we have a profile view. So I can take a look at my profile. And this is where we can do a lot of the interactive classification in ArcMap. So everything in this window is going to be full resolution. We're not looking at a thin representation of this data set, of this profile. So if I zoomed in and select this particular area, I can reclassify it to water and hit apply. Now we can see the points have changed to blue. And if I wanted to, I can move my my profile window up the river. Let's see. So there we go. And then select these points. And it's only doing 75% movement, so I'll still see some of the blue shots. I can change that to 100% as it goes up the river and reclassify the water. So it's just I didn't really select all the water. That's okay. I would be more careful if it was my data and it wasn't a demo. But so it's a really interesting way that you can go in and reclassify data that's, you know, like water, bird shots, any sort of noise. You can also change the classification flags, which is an additional classification on top of the basic classification, so points that you want withheld and not viewed at all.
Are there any tools that have your own classification from feature class or ASCII?
We do not. You can use the reserve form here, and you can add your own based on. There's 255 classes.
What do you mean manually? Is there like old manual way of doing it?
There's no manual way of doing it, no, or importing. You can, if it's in the file, if it's in the last file, it's going to show here. No, we follow the ASPRS standard. So, and the reserved, if the reserved have different classifications in the file, then that will appear. Whatever's in the file is what we show. And then we also, if you wanted to look at this profile in 3D, you can also pop up the 3D view. What time is it? Okay. I'm going to switch over to Pro. This is the same data in Pro, and I just wanted to show that we can click on the data, and we have a classification tab. And you can go in and select points here. Now, what happens with the selection-based approach of classifying your data is that everything's grayed out. We want to classify on full resolution data because we don't want to miss anything, right? So with Pro, we don't show the points that can be selected until we're zoomed in at a certain level, and now we're looking at full resolution. So now I'm able to go in and use my selection tool and select points. I think I select, there we go, and then change them to building here. And then hit apply. So that's how we do some classification in Pro. Now I want to show you some of the different types of data and not just the aerial LiDAR. So this is an example of mobile LiDAR of the Esri campus. So if I zoom in, oops, I have my selection on here. There we go. We can zoom in and we can see the route that was driven. We can zoom in a little more. This is actually our main building at Esri. This is one of the main drives through, and you can see the people walking and the signs. And this building's made mostly of glass, so you don't get the same returns as you would from the wood paneling. Hold on, let me just let it draw. This data has about 70 million points in it, so it's a big data set. Another thing that's different with Pro versus ArcMap is that we don't have the ability to look at the statistics in Pro yet. We're working on that for 1.4 for our next release. So I definitely recommend building the last data set in ArcMap until we get that into Pro. You can do some measuring, too. You can measure the height of this building. See how high it is. We can. Good question. I was actually going to do that next. Thank you for the reminder. So under the symbology tab, we can decrease the size of these big, large circles. And then it'll just redraw. So it's just really interesting how with RGB values, you can see clearly the features on the road. The next data set I wanted to show, this is a photogrammetric point cloud. This was created with Pix4D, which is the software that our new drone to map software is built on, the technology. And it just looks like a realistic photo. And it was just this drone, little drone flown around and collected all this information. This is a park near Denver, right? Yeah, it's about 30 feet high, this outcrop. And I can go to a couple other areas and just look at the features and the detail that it gives you. Just quite incredible, actually. You can see all the cracks in the pavement, even. This data is the Geiger mode LiDAR that Harris provided us. So it's very, very dense. And we're looking at the classification codes here. If I zoom to, I think I'm getting short on my time. Okay. And I can change the filtering options and just look at ground. Maybe. I don't have it selected. Okay. Let's So we're just looking at the ground data. And I can go into the layer properties, click on the filters, and say I only want to look at the buildings, for example. And so it's just going to use the buildings. So I can zoom in. And then the next thing I wanted to show was using the extract last tool to just extract that information out. Lots of extract tools here. There it is. So we're working with this data. Pick my folder. And I can just set the processing extent to be the exact same as my display. So it knows the coordinates of my display, and then I can just run the tool. And okay, I'm just going to take a second. Usually this is really quick, but you never know, because being that I'm demoing it live right now, that it might take a little longer than usual. Seems like it is. The good thing about with geoprocessing in Pro is that you can do other things while it's running. But I want to see it, so there we go. So then it's going to add the new last data set. And being that I was kind of at a tilted angle, it captured a little bit more than just my one building, which is fine for this example. But it's an interesting way now that how we can extract information out of the point cloud and create new last files. It is, let me double check. I can't remember what release it was at. I think it will be if it's not right now. Basically, as we build new tools in Pro, we always port them over to the next ArcMap build. It's in 10.4, okay. And then 10.5 will have the tile last tool and some of the classification, the building classification tool. One more quick demo I wanted to show, if that's okay with Cody. I'm over, I know. Is that okay? Okay. Is how to tile data. So this one tile is over a gigabyte in size, and it takes a long time to draw, and it's just clunky. And so I want to rebuild it and tile up the data. And you can also create a new last data set. So let's call it. So you can, it automatically selects what the version of the last files are for you and the point record format, but you can change all that. Automatically selects rearrange the points, because we recommend doing that. And then you have some tiling options. So I generally like to keep my tiles small, and then so I usually use the size. And then hit run. So now it's going to go through and retile the data based on my file sizes and rearrange the points. So it'll be much faster to use, easier to do geoprocessing tools and analysis on the data. So, and while this is running, I guess I can switch over to you, Cody, since it's going to take a second. Oh, you're not? Okay. One more second. Yeah.
All of these tools, do they work on the compressed?
Yes. The question is, do they work on that ZLAS format? Anything that has to write to the file does not. So any classification tools, you'd have to decompress it back to LAS. Do your editing and then put it back in the ZLAS format. But any tiling does. Recreating the ZLAS, you can use this tool to create ZLAS. So as you can see, it's almost done. and you'll just it'll just add a new last data set and you'll see the new tiles. So yeah. Yeah, it was over a gig. And it adds the last data set. I can double check. Yeah, 1.2 gigs. And so it retiled it. And another thing to add is that we have this LA, we have a different UTM, what is it called? The LAX file. So that's the statistics file. It's a text file that's stored next to the last files on disk. So it allows us to access the statistics really quickly and view them. So. Right. See, this is how it tiled it. So if I turn off this one, so that's the tiling scheme that it used. But I should switch over to Cody, and I can answer any other questions at the end of Cody's presentation.
So, I'm on 4. You got it?
I'm worried I'm going to hit that button.
Okay. So. All right. Well, thanks for being here, folks. So I want to switch over and talk a little bit more about some of the management aspects and recommended management structure. But just a real quick review, the last data set is that data structure for pointing at an individual project and working or tiles from a project and treating them as a logical project. The terrain data set, again, is for maintaining that authoritative DTM. And you had a question about that. I want to make sure and get back to that. I'm not sure if... you know how sometimes you'll ask a question and the answer goes to maybe a different question? I'm not sure if we were talking about the same thing, so let me come back to that. But then what I want to do is talk then again about how we recommend managing an overall collection or large collections of LIDAR data using terrain surfaces, the DSM and DTM, and the Mosaic data set. So there are a couple of different... methods. Certainly you can use the terrain data set, but most of what I'm going to show is going to focus on the Mosaic data set and managing rasters. So to just give you a quick overview of the Mosaic data set, I guess I'm curious, how many in the audience would say you have used the Mosaic, maybe more than just a little bit? Okay, so we've got some experience in the crowd, but maybe some of you aren't as comfortable with it. Those who do know the Mosaic inside and out, please bear with me for one or two slides. I just want to make sure and set the context. So if you're not intimately familiar with it or at all, the Mosaic dataset is a database structure for working with raster data. So it looks at everything as a raster, or it works essentially only on rasters. The Mosaic dataset is in a geodatabase, so it's a database structure for editing, et cetera. But the imagery or the rasters are not in the geodatabase. So there's been confusion on that over the years. For the most part, in most cases, I do not recommend putting images, or in this case, terrain models, into a GIS. Or I'm sorry, into a database. I want you to store your DSM and DTM as TIFF files and then use the Mosaic dataset to reference them. And that's what that first bullet refers to when it says it references the sources. If you've got DSM or DTM tiles in UTM and you've got others in State Plane and you've got some in Web Mercator, the Mosaic dataset can access and manage all of those on the fly. So you don't need to reproject from UTM to State Plane. The Mosaic dataset can do that for you. The next bullet, ingesting and defining metadata, any dataset that comes in, We try and bring in any of the key metadata, but in many scenarios, you'll want to add your own custom fields into that database table. For example, project ID or a vendor. If you're buying LIDAR data, you may want to put the vendor ID into your Mosaic dataset so you can quickly access key metadata. The Mosaic dataset also allows processing to be defined and applied on the fly. And in the case of elevation, the most obvious example would be something like a hillshade. It also can apply to slope or aspect. In the old days, you used to have to, if you wanted a hillshade, you'd have to run a GP tool and create a new dataset. And it would take time and it would eat up disk space, and now you've got more data to manage. With the Mosaic dataset, adding a raster function, we can instantaneously give you a hillshade. You can, of course, change the orientation and the elevation of the sun. We can give you a slope in degrees or percent rise aspect. We've got an elevation void fill. So sometimes with LIDAR data, some people prefer to leave the voids unfilled so they can see where those voids are. But then if you want to process a DTM and fill those voids, we can do that instantaneously. It's not something you have to process and wait for and duplicate all of your data. Probably enough on that. So those functions are what we refer to as the on-the-fly processing. The dynamic mosaicing is simply an indication that if you've got 100 tiles, or in the case of imagery, if you've got a lot of different image files, once again, to make a mosaic, you don't have to run a tool and create a new output. That mosaicing is done on the fly. And again, the source data can be in different map, different coordinate systems or different projections. And then the advantage in this case is not only speed and disk space, but if you have overlapping rasters and you want to see the data from two or more different files in that overlap region, you haven't lost it. You can bring any file you want to the foreground. And then, of course, being a database structure, we can browse and search for imagery or rasters as a catalog, but you can also pan and zoom on the map and select data based on imagery. So those same mosaic data sets, they can be used by your colleagues or within a local area network. If you want to share through ArcGIS server, then those same mosaic data sets can be shared as image services. So that would include the ability to bring different rasters to the foreground, invoke the different functions, again, something like Hillshade if you'd like to see it. And we can also share geoprocessing services or geoprocessing tasks as GP services. And this is something that, even though it's been available for a couple of years, I'm finding a lot of people are not aware of. So I'll come back to that, and presuming we've got time, I'll go ahead and show a quick demo. Those services, of course, can be private within your organization, or you can share through ArcGIS Online. Actually, I shouldn't have phrased it that way. ArcGIS Online can still be private. You don't have to. That doesn't necessarily imply you're sharing with the public. But through ArcGIS Online, the typical use case is to share with many, many users. If you've got Portal, of course, you can share through Portal as well. Okay, so that's the end of my boilerplate slides. Thank you for bearing with me. So getting into specifics, if you're going to follow my recommendations and put your LIDAR into a mosaic data set, there are a couple of different methods. The fastest method is to directly read the last data set into a mosaic data set. And if you read through our help documentation, this is one of the first things that they show you can do. And it does work. You can do this. I typically portray this or encourage people to do this if you're kind of in a hurry, if your boss is breathing down your neck. And it occurred to me on that previous slide, it may not just be a colleague sitting next to you. You may want to share this data with somebody across the country. It can be literally a matter of minutes to go from last files to a last data set to a mosaic data set to an image service. So it's very good for if you want to get something on screen fairly quickly. For best scalability and performance, this is not what I recommend in a long-term management structure. And we can talk about the exact reasons why. Actually, before I move on, I should finish this slide. So with one last data set, you can configure it so that it will show the last returns and the ground classified points and give you the DTM. You can use the same last data set with a different filter and show a DSM. For the best scalability and performance, what I recommend is you go ahead and take that last data set, and in this case, this is contrary to some of my earlier comments. In this case, I do recommend you run a geoprocessing tool and actually create TIFF files on disk. And there are a couple of reasons for this. One is it's just faster for our server technology to share through a mosaic data set if you've got TIFF files on disk. The other reason is the last data set gives you that ability to change the filtering, but what I've found in a lot of organizations is once they've got their digital terrain model built, they've spent time deciding what the proper cell size is going to be, whether they're going to apply constraints, etc., and you don't want to find out later that somebody changed the last data set and now you're seeing something different in your output. So there's generally this threshold you want to cross and say, I've now got my authoritative DTM and DSM, and that's what we're going to share and visualize and use for most of our work. There is some work you're going to want to go back to the LIDAR points for. But this is basically what I'm recommending. And then there's a specific tool that I want to make sure everyone's aware of. If you've worked with ArcGIS and LiDAR, there's a tool called Last Dataset to Raster. And that works relatively well up to a few gigabytes size of the raster. But if you've got a massive LiDAR collection, you really don't want to try and create one single raster of 10, 20, 30 gigabytes in size. It just doesn't perform that well. So the 3D team, one of Lindsay's colleagues, built this tool for us. And it's exactly the same underlying tool, but it applies a tiling structure on top. And I did the screenshot with the tile definition highlighted. One of the things I think is very powerful about it is the ability to bring in a feature class to define those tile boundaries. So if you're doing multiple collections over time, you can make sure your rasters have exactly the same extents. You can name those rasters with a field in your feature class. There's some real power there. If you don't want to bother, the tool can lay out a default grid for you. Okay, so that's the first step that I'm recommending is create those authoritative surfaces before moving on to management. So my recommended approach to LiDAR data management is to follow our elevation data management recommendations, which is what I'm going to go into at this point. And then through this method, you're basically visualizing the hillshade or different versions of the surfaces. If you do have users who want the 3D point data, we can expose those and allow them to download those files. And then you may do your 3D point analysis in ArcGIS. In some cases, I'll give plenty of credit to our business partners. For example, GeoQ LP360 has some really good feature extraction capabilities. And in many cases, I'll recommend our users go to some of our business partners for those 3D analysis tasks. I do want to talk a little bit about how to build and maintain this structure through automation, and then I'll talk a little bit about sharing. So very briefly, what I recommend is to manage each project separately, starting with the last data set, then create your surface rasters from that, and we have a specific method of combining projects into a master repository, and that's really kind of the core of where I'm going with this discussion. Then manage the DTM and DSM as your base data, and then if you have users who want hillshade or if they want a different projection, et cetera, you can get that immediately out of the Mosaic data set. Geoprocessing services I mentioned, and I'll come back to that, but really the short story there is if you've got colleagues or users who want to do certain tasks, examples would be a downstream trace, a volumetric analysis, those kind of things. They don't have to download the data and then have processing power on their computer or even a tablet. You can expose those kind of repeatable tasks to a lightweight client, and I'll come back to that. And then again, we'll configure the 3D points for download. So to just give you a visual picture, I'm kind of going back to what I just said, and that is to manage each project separately. A lot of times with LiDAR, instead of having just one LiDAR collection on screen and then nothing outside that, what I would encourage or what I find a lot of users want to do is put that on top of something like the NED so you've got some context for what's around your LiDAR project. So in this case, I'm showing SRTM in the middle, which is 90 or 30 meter data. The USGS NED is 30 and 10, and in some areas, 3 meter data. So what I would encourage is you put each of these projects into their own Mosaic data set and then stop and do the QC on the Mosaic data set. Make sure it's rendering properly. Make sure that it's configured the way you want it to look. And then the end point or the end goal here is to put everything into a coherent single management structure. So next month when your boss asks where last week's LiDAR is, you can tell him it's in the same place it always is. It's in our one master collection. We have everything there. A couple of really important footnotes. One is that note in the middle. If you're familiar with the Mosaic data set, when you add data into it, you should declare a raster type. And I'm guilty, like a lot of people, of just trying the defaults and moving on. In this scenario, you do not want to use the default raster type. If you're dealing with satellite data, you want to use the specific satellite raster type because that brings in all kinds of metadata and the camera model. In this scenario, if you put a mosaic data set into a mosaic data set, if you use the default raster type, you're now embedding a database table inside another database table. And that will work to a few levels or a few data sets, but if you have dozens or hundreds of data sets mixed together that way, you will see performance problems. If you use the table raster type, now you're going to make a copy of all the records in the mosaic, in the source mosaics, in that central derived mosaic. So just to reiterate that or say it again in a different way, if I have 100 records in each of these three, if I use that default raster type, the central mosaic will only have 3 records. And that may sound preferred in some scenarios, but that's where you could get into performance problems. So if you use the table raster type, you're going to get 300 records in that central mosaic. And in that case, one of the key steps is you want to make sure your source mosaics have a data set ID or some custom field, whatever you want to call it, to identify where it came from. Under the covers, the mosaic data set does know that. It does know which source it came from. But just for visibility and usability, I recommend having a field there that you can easily see. This is LIDAR collection over St. Louis from May of 2015 or whatever. I guess one other thing, I don't have the text on this slide, but one of the, at least I don't think I do. No, I don't. So one of the, another footnote I've put on this slide sometimes is the advantage is putting all of your data in one location. But I need to make sure it's clear. I don't mean mixing imagery in with surface models. So, or there are some scenarios where you might mix something like Landsat with high resolution imagery, but I would replicate this structure for your digital terrain model and then replicate the same structure for your digital surface model. There are scenarios where you may want to go ahead and mix those together, but generally this architecture is for similar data that makes sense to go together. So once we've compiled that centralized mosaic, I can now either share image services or, in this case, what I'm showing are reference mosaic data sets, which are read-only mosaic data sets with those various functions applied. This is actually an old graphic. This is the way we had to do it at 10.0. And I think my next slide, well, I'll come back to that. So the advantage, another advantage is when I add new LiDAR into my system, I stop and do QC on that first source mosaic, but then when I merge it in, all of my downstream products are already done. You don't have to do anything to rebuild the hillshade or regenerate slope. I don't have ellipsoidal height on the screen, but another common need is to convert from orthometric height to ellipsoidal height. If you're orthorectifying satellite imagery onto a DSM or a DTM, in many cases you need an ellipsoidal height. You can do that with a raster function. You don't have to recreate and rewrite an entirely new data set. Okay, so this is getting old by this point, but at 10.1 we added the ability to add those raster functions on an image service. So, and one fundamental reason for doing this is it's much more efficient on your server. In my previous diagram, you're going to have server resources, memory, et cetera, dedicated to each of these services, even if no one is using them. If you simply attach functions onto that one master service, now the client can say, give me hillshade, give me slope, but there's really only one service running, and it's just more efficient on your server. And I think that may be the point where I'm going to jump out and do a quick demo. So if I convince you to follow this structure, what I wanted to do is just very quickly show you what it looks like. So this is the ArcGIS Online web map, and I've loaded into it. That's interesting. I've never seen that happen. The checkbox is off, but the layer is showing. Wow. Okay, well, the goodness is it's showing. I don't know why the checkbox isn't showing. So this is the World Elevation Service from ArcGIS Online. If you're not aware of it, we provide a dial tone of elevation data from for virtually the entire land area of the Earth. And what you're seeing, of course, are the brightness values indicate height. Most people don't really like to look at black and white terrain. So what I'll do is turn on my grayscale hillshade. And this is an honest live demo. I don't have 2 terabytes here on my desk. I'm actually bringing this from Amazon. And so this is just a quick example of the hillshade I was talking about. Again, I know you all know what a hillshade looks like, but just to reiterate the point, there's no hillshade to the east. When I pan, the server grabs the data at the proper resolution, applies the hillshade, and sends a JPEG to my screen. But that's all done on the fly. If you'd like something more like slope, this we probably won't see much because slope, in this case, this is in degrees. So it goes from 0 to 90, and you're not going to see much on screen. I can apply a stretch, of course, and make that a little bit brighter so you can see it. And this, but again, this is rendered on the fly. We can also do slope and percent rise. So any of those sort of global functions that don't depend on exactly where am I, and I can apply the same process everywhere, we can apply as a function. So if I have time, remind me to come back if you'd like me to show how to within the ArcGIS Online web map. Let me just try this very quickly. I'm currently rendering slope. And I think what it'll return, okay, what it returns if I do a query is it'll return elevation. If you're building a custom web app, you can fairly easily configure it so it will report slope and elevation here. I can do the same thing in the ArcGIS Online web map, but if you have a very complicated function, for example, well, let me go ahead and show you. If I turn on the slope map, what we've done here is applied a color map to render so you can see whether you're looking at steep or shallow slope. The gray areas are flat. But if you configure this client to report what it's seeing on screen, it will give you either elevation or RGB values. But this client isn't smart enough to drill through the rendering and ignore the colors but report the slope. It's either the whole function chain or no functions. But with a custom app, you can do both. So that was a bit of a tangent. Apologize for that. Let me run back to the hillshade and just show a couple more things very, very quickly. So this is the live world elevation service. On top of that, let me go back to my hillshade. On top of that, I've loaded essentially a copy from the from an Amazon server, but in this case we've got some LiDAR data, so I've got a digital surface model from the LiDAR as well. And once again, it's interesting. I can't tell if that button is checked on or not. Let me go ahead and zoom in to where we can see the LiDAR data. This is from, I think, the city of Portland. And once it refreshes, there it is. So that checkbox is on. So if you're going to follow my recommendations, this is kind of what I'm encouraging that most of your users will want to see. Show me where the LiDAR data is. Let me zoom in and see if I'm at the right intersection, if I've got the right stand of trees. If you don't have the DSM turned on, and I turn off that DSM and refresh, we should be able to see. Well, never mind. Perhaps not important. You can tell just by the resolution of what you're seeing that you do have very high resolution elevation data there. And again, if it wasn't clear when I zoom out, I'm not looking at a resampled version of the NED 10 meter that is at a much lower resolution. In this case, we just switch over to the SRTM or the GMTED data. So the Mosaic data set is managing which layer we're accessing and which one is being rendered. So I also wanted to show very briefly, if I call up the attribute table, I can actually get back to any individual data set. For example, this is a watershed in Idaho, and if I say center on selection, I can zoom, I don't know if you can see that highlight, but I can zoom back to a specific collection. And this field, I'm not sure if you can read it, but it says data set ID. That's not a standard field. That's one we added so that I could look at that and say, okay, I know this is coming from the NED 1/9 arc second. And then if we want to focus on that particular layer, I can go to this image display order, and that's how we labeled it in ArcGIS Online web map. If you're working with the Mosaic data set, this is the Mosaic method. So I'm sorry for the confusion, two different names for the same thing. But instead of displaying by attribute where we're displaying the highest resolution, what I want to do is display a single a single data set, and it's the object ID here, number 2. So this is behind the scenes. This is what the Mosaic data set calls lock raster, and I think my DSM may still be turned on. This is strange. I've never had this kind of. There we go. I had to just get that out of the map so you could see it. So in this case, what I've done is hidden all the other rasters, and I'm looking only at that one record. So even though I'm encouraging you to put everything into a central collection, you can get back to just any single record or any group of records if you would like to. And then, of course, you can reproject this, you can clip out of it, that sort of thing. But I think that's all I wanted to show in this demo. So let me jump back. Yes, that was all I wanted to show there. Okay, let me continue. And we've got about 15 minutes left. I want to make sure we've got maybe 10 minutes for questions, so I may not get through my second demo. So everything I've done so far has been dragging you through the raster domain, and I want to acknowledge that some people really do want to get at those 3D points. So there are really a couple of methods to do it. One is if you've got a last data set in a Mosaic data set, and then you go through server, the default option for download is disabled. The presumption is most people don't really want to share data and let anybody just download the original files. But you can enable download, and then if your users authenticate and sign in, however you decide to manage that, you can allow them to download individual files. And these are the original source files that are driving the Mosaic data set. Now, if you're really paying attention and thinking about what I've said, this goes back to the architecture I do not recommend. Okay, so I'll admit that. But if you want to expose this for your users to download the tiles, then I would create a Mosaic data set to do this. And keep in mind, the Mosaic data set, if you've got 500 gigabytes of LiDAR and 100 gigabytes of DTMs, this is only a few megabytes. So you're not talking about any appreciable data volume, but we're simply enabling this download. But again, for simplicity, I typically recommend to use an alternative, which is to export the boundaries or the footprints of your LiDAR tiles as a feature class, then share that as a feature service, and within that feature service have a URL link where people can say, if I want that tile, I'm just seeing its boundaries, I'll visualize those boundaries on a hillshade, but when I click the URL to download, now I'm just going to S3 or an FTP site and grabbing those files. And there's more detail on this. I'll get to it a little bit later where you can find the documentation. Okay, I'm going to take a quick tangent and talk about the geoprocessing services. Maybe I've already made this point, and that is if you've got repeatable processes you want to run, you don't necessarily have to have your entire organization with ArcMap in the field or on their desktop. You can expose geoprocessing tasks as services. A couple of examples, ViewShed, Line of Sight, those are in our World Elevation service. You can see those functions in, or I'm sorry, not functions, those services, geoprocessing services through ArcGIS Online. Something like volume calculation, I can show you, but that's not built into ArcGIS Online at this point. And then at the bottom, of course, you can expose these to a lightweight client so you don't have to have the processing power to do all the work. I'll tell you what, I'm going to kind of mix or switch in and out on you. I'm going to skip this for now. Let me get through to the end so I can show you the slides of where to find these some of these things. If there's time, I'll come back and show. Basically, the sharing LiDAR for download is just actually a customer site, which I think is kind of nice. And the server-side processing is a volume calculation. That's what the screenshot is from. But I do want to talk about how we do this behind the scenes. I will acknowledge that with all the power of the Mosaic data set, it can sometimes get confusing which setting to use. There are something like 100 or 125 properties. And sometimes it's not always obvious which one to use. So if you want it to be repeatable and scalable and maintainable, you've got to automate this process. And I think at the bottom, well, let me finish this. If you've automated your creation of these management structures, then obviously it's documented as well. What we've done is tried to publish our recommended best practices as examples for you to use. I put simplicity last to simply acknowledge, of course, we do want to make it simple, and we really are working as hard as we can to make it simple. But I think it would be a little misleading for me to tell you what we're offering in these workflows is truly simple. you do still have to know what the footprint is. You do still have to understand the difference between pyramids and overviews in the Mosaic data set. But what we're doing is making it repeatable and scalable and maintainable for you. So options for automation. I shouldn't have manual on here, but you can use Model Builder. If you've ever tried to compare two models to each other and figure out what's different, it can be a little bit difficult. I'm a big fan of Model Builder. I think it's a fantastic tool, but it doesn't do everything. So we've implemented something within using Python called the Mosaic Dataset Configuration Script. I think I can truthfully say there's no custom code in this. All we're doing is linking together multiple GP tools. So you're creating mosaics, you're adding rasters, you're setting properties, but we've wrapped it into a single tool driven by an XML file so that if you've got a new project, you only change a few parameters and then build exactly the same structure, and now you know everything is being built the same way. And I'm going to skip this because hopefully that's fairly obvious. Just a quick visual graphic. You need to define your input data paths, the tools you're going to use, the raster types, and the properties, and it's everything in that lower tier that we're portraying or offering as our recommended best practices. And then I don't really have a lot in this demo, so let me just do this real quick, and I can still go back to that last one if you'd like. What I wanted to show you is if you go to the web page that I will show in a moment, and you download our elevation example, this is the file structure, folder structure you'll find underneath. And some of these are actually added. These that I'm highlighting are not in that download, but I've added a few things into mine. But where you're going is to look at these sample models. And for example, if I open this in Model Builder, when you call MDCS, it will create one mosaic data set. So if you think back to my structure, I've got SRTM, I've got NED 30 meter, I've got NED 10 meter. Each of those is a separate mosaic data set. So I'm calling MDCS several times, not in this model, but in sample two, where I'm building a more complicated structure. If you do want to use this and apply it to your data, you will need to become familiar in the parameter folder under configuration. This is where we have the XML files that define the processing. And I don't know about you, I don't really like looking at XML, but what you'll find if you open these up and spend a little bit of time getting familiar with them, you'll see familiar phrases. You'll see add rasters, you'll see set properties, you'll see add fields. So it's not over the top of everybody's head. It's relatively straightforward, but I'm not going to bore you with showing those XML files. Okay, so if there are more questions, obviously I can get back to that, but I do want to get on screen, show you how to find it. And I'm going to go through this quickly. So if you go to the Resource Center and then under Communities, you'll see Imagery. On the right-hand side is the Image Management Workflows link. That takes you to what we call the landing page. This is really just an advertising page for where to find or for the workflows that are there. And then there's a link right at the top to the Image Management Guidebook. And I'll show you the next screen. This is a really deep dive, dense reading, and it will put you to sleep, so I wouldn't do more than an hour or two a day, and it'll probably take you time to get through this. But what we've tried to do is put a layer of advice on top of our help. The help system will tell you what you can do. What we've tried to do here is tell you what we recommend you should do and why. So I'm pointing at there's a standard workflow, then the elevation workflow builds on the standard workflow specifically for elevation, then there's one for aerial LiDAR data. Now I've jumped back to that landing page, and I'm focusing on right in the center of that first page. There's a link to a group in ArcGIS Online, and this is where we have the scripts available for download. And you can take a picture of that if you want, but this is the screen that has it all in one place. So these are all shortcuts. So the Imagery Resource Center is at the top. From there, the guide or the workflows landing page, then the guidebook and the online group. And there were a couple of recorded webinars that may be applicable as well. And if you want that tool, it's the last link, the tools from the 3D team. Let me jump forward. Oh, one other thing. If you go to the group and you don't see anything, there's a button on the side, Show ArcGIS Desktop Content. I want to get here to remind you and request that you fill out the survey, but now I'll go back to leave this on screen.
We're done. That's it.
Thank you. We got 4 minutes. We got 5 minutes.
We have a couple minutes for questions.
I have time for questions. Lindsay has to get on the road. Yes, go ahead.
No. The tile last tool?
Completely seamless.
The question was, are there any discrepancies around tile boundaries, which is a traditional problem with tiling? No, there is not. We've made sure of that. Yeah.
You know, I wish I could completely agree with that. But
planning, we have tested.
On the LIDAR point side, I think that is true.
Yeah.
When you follow my recommendation to rasters, you can see some edge artifacts. If I jump back to that tool, you'll see Khaled actually built there's a built-in overlap that automatically defaults to 64 pixels. You can control that if you want.
Yeah.
But yes, I have seen cases where you've got UTM tiles and you reproject a state plane and it's interesting, I don't see gaps in the elevation data, but when I apply a hill shade, sometimes I do see artifacts. And I won't tell you the long story, but there's a feature within the software to hide or add this edge effect interpolation, and the terminology on that checkbox is confusing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's simpler and better to just add a few pixels of overlap. It's a fraction of your data volume. But on the raster side, yes, sometimes there are issues. That's why we build in the overlap.
Okay.
Go ahead. Right?
Is that correct?
Yes. If you guys don't mind, let me jump back to ArcMap, and I can show you this fairly quickly. Any other questions while I'm mousing? Okay, give me just a few seconds. So what I've got in this case, this is an optical collection, and I've got two different dates. You may not be able to see when I flicker back and forth those stockpiles changing, but the DSM, I think, is fairly easy to see those three stockpiles in the center. Okay, so these are two different dates, about 6 weeks apart. And Lindsay, if you want to go, that's okay.
Okay.
So on this server, I have run the geoprocessing tool to do volume calculation, and it's served. And I can give you the URL to this if you want to play with it. And in this case, if I want to get the volume of this stockpile, all I have to do is draw a polygon around it, and then send that to the server. Now, in this case, ArcMap has the power to do this. So this isn't the best client to demo this. But the server is now extracting the DSM and doing that volume calculation and returns to me a feature class with the volume of 1,300 cubic meters in that feature class. And this is just the way we've implemented it. You know, you can, if you were to implement this in a custom web map, you wouldn't have to go through so many mouse clicks. You could just do a quick calculation. But that's one example of the of geoprocessing service. So did that answer? I kind of switched your question. You asked about the Mosaic data set. This is an image service, but it's being driven by a Mosaic data set. And if you're not serving and you're just on desktop, you can do this as well. Okay. Oh, you're setting up? Okay. Okay. So I've got time for more questions. Any other? Yes. Okay. Right. You know, I was going to interrupt when that happened. So if you couldn't hear the question, Lindsay showed taking a LIDAR tile and chopping it, or a last file and chopping it into tiles. But those tiles came out looking like they overlapped and it didn't make a lot of logical sense. I was going to interrupt at that point and explain. So I'm glad you asked. What happened in that case is she had reprojected on screen. I don't know what projection it was in, but if you've got a UTM last file and you display it in state plane, it will reproject. But the graphic overlay that we add onto a last file that shows you the extents of the last files does not try to follow exactly the boundary of the last. And when you've got tiles, that sounds kind of silly. But if you can imagine, you get to the edge, And if you've got a really irregular edge, it could be very expensive to try and figure out where that is. So what that graphic is showing you is just the north, south, east, west extents. So if you take edge match tiles and reproject them, and then look at the extents of those, they appear to overlap even though they really don't. I've been bugging the 3D team to change that. So far, we haven't made that change. Thank you for bringing it up. Yeah. Right.
Is it still going to hold critical edges, like in this case your stockpiles? Are you going to get your slope, or is it just going to give you an arbitrary resampling without holding
it as it maxes? So let me repeat that. I apologize, I didn't jump on this at the time, but I was working on my demos and only half paying attention. But in the, were you asking about the terrain data set or just any of these?
Well, I was just trying to get a sense of what you said, that you can get lower density displays as you're zooming in or out.
Okay. Okay, so if you didn't hear the question, what he's asking about is when I'm reducing resolution, if you've got something like a ridgeline or a hydrology, and we're looking at a reduced resolution, you don't want to see that ridgeline get flattened out or the hydrology be lifted up. In the terrain data set, the constraints you use, you can either have key points or break lines and hydrology features, and those are honored. So if you have them, that's correct. If you don't do anything to add them, then the software doesn't know where to put those points.
So it's not finding relative mins and maxes.
You know, I may be wrong about that, but I think not. I think if you want to add break lines and generate, actually, we do have tools for generating key points, but it's something you have to explicitly decide to do. That's one of the challenges we often have within ArcGIS is trying to decide when should we do something automatically and just do it because it's good for the user, and then somebody comes along with a terabyte data set and they're waiting for 4 hours just to see it on screen. It's the same reason when you bring up LiDAR files, you just see wireframes. Wouldn't it be nice if we would create a resampled view so you could see something? But that could take time.
But that flat bottom that you're looking at, right. It's all the same elevation. If you were going to decimate this, you could sample out far fewer points before you got the stockpiles. You want the top bridge and the toe.
Right.
And if you have to go and manually what resolution do you create those points?
Right. So within the terrain data set, there are a lot of tools for doing exactly that. That's why I was referring to it as being the right data structure for authoritative maintaining an authoritative DTM. But if you're just going to generate something quickly and manage it as a TIFF file, then you want to do that in the last data set. There are constraints in the last data set. I assume Lindsay mentioned that. If one of us didn't, I apologize. You can add hydrology and break lines in the last data set. Then when you create your TIFF files, if you do what I'm recommending, those will be honored. Again, that's at full resolution. And I think I'm only answering about 80% of your question.
I guess I'm curious, were those flags that you would create in the last file, since you aren't truly adding
So you're referring to the constraints I was just referring to? Well, those have to be features. So either key points as points or break lines and hydrology as input features. Of course, you can draw them if you've got time. But I appreciate it. If you've got a massive project, that takes time. Wouldn't it be nice if it was automatic?
Or if there was a way that you could create classification flags, like the gentleman was asking, if you create unique classifications, if there was a way to create hydro toe and ground.
Okay. I think you're definitely getting beyond my expertise. I think we do have some of that, probably not as much as you would like. But I would encourage you to talk to our real experts and don't take my word for it. There are more capabilities for some of what you're asking. Again, there's a difference if you're talking about the last data set versus my exported rasters versus the terrain data set. So it's...
I guess that's where I'm trying to find the interplay.
Right.
Some of these things being more optimal.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I hope I gave you at least a partial answer, and again, we can put you in touch with the engineers who really know exactly what's in there, how it works, when it doesn't, that kind of thing. So I've got business cards if anybody needs them. Yes. 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 Lindsay said something about the different formats, and what she meant was the different versions of LAS. But yeah, we support all the different versions of the LAS spec. I wish we supported more different formats like LAZ. But I'm sorry. Yes, I didn't correlate that to ArcGIS version number. If you go back to 10.3, 10.2, then I don't think it would. We didn't have any way of supporting LAS 1.4 when we built ArcGIS 10.2. So I think that's, I'm pretty sure that's true. Yeah. So yes, we do support 1.4. And I think it was probably 10.3. I don't think you have to go, I'm sure you don't have to go to 10.4 ArcGIS to support LAS 1.4. Yes. Correct. Several reasons. One is duplicating data. I mean, if you take your imagery. So the question is, why am I recommending not to put imagery into the geodatabase? One is data volume. Another, I think this is kind of an old problem that most people have worked around, but I've heard of problems where I would put all my rasters into the geodatabase, and the IT department didn't know that, and so they're filling up their backup with a geodatabase that's got billions of pixels in it, and those pixels don't change. If you're not editing your DTM, if you've got an authoritative DTM and you're just leaving those files alone, there's no reason any of the data volume is going to be changing. But if it's inside the geodatabase, they just see the database, so they back it up and fill up their backups. So that's one reason. There are certainly some performance issues. And again, I don't want to badmouth the geodatabase or an enterprise database like Oracle. I mean, they do some very good work, but for performance, we've found the fastest performance is tiled TIFF files for serving through ArcGIS for server. So, excuse me a minute. Do you start at quarter after?
Yes.
Okay, so I don't.
I have to, because this is Windows 10 and okay. It's causing issues.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, you can take the screen if you need it. I think there was another reason, but I can't. I think it's primarily performance and data volume, and of course time. If you've got gigabytes of rasters, it's going to take time to copy all of that into the geodatabase. I'm not a database expert, but from my perspective, what you want to put into the database is something that you know when anybody edits any small area or any feature, any record. But I would argue in most cases, you're not editing pixels, so there's no reason for an image, the huge data volume of an image, to be in the geodatabase. All you really need in the geodatabase is who's accessing it, what's the metadata for those files. Now again, if you're in an organization that did this years ago and you've got imagery in the geodatabase, I don't necessarily think you need to go through a lot of trouble to take it all back out. I've seen some cases where we've recommended that, but not necessarily. You bet. So if you do already have rasters in a geodatabase, I don't know that it's a huge problem that you need to change anything, but moving forward, I typically wouldn't. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm losing track now of my crowd versus your crowd. Sure. Any other questions about my crowd? Yes. Right.
I used to be able to rotate the profile, and now I can't. Are you supposed to be able to rotate it?
So I'm not sure. We'd probably want to find the right people down. Is the show floor closed now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. If did you get my email the other day? My email address. Sorry, not email. My address. Yeah. Send me an email, and I'll find someone who knows. I'm sorry, I don't know that. Any other questions? LIDAR, elevation, mosaic data sets, image services, geoprocessing services? Okay, I think we're over time.